Woo-hoo! Welcome to the Some Work, All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today. Yeah, we're looking out on the Boulder weather right now. It is stunning. It is sunny. It is beautiful. It is going to be warm today. It's going to be tanning weather.
It's like 60 degrees. Oh, I feel like spring is just in the air and there's like so much hope and optimism ahead, except we are supposed to get a big snowstorm coming ahead, which is funny because last week I was in class and we have to go back to California at some point. I have a bunch of meetings. And so it's just been a matter of when we were going to schedule this trip. And for some reason I had this snowmass weather saved on my computer, but I was in class and so I didn't know it was snowmass weather, and they're supposed to get snow for the next like 7 days. So I said this to David and I'm like, we have to go to California. Like, it's going to snow in Boulder for the next seven days.
So I'm immediately like, of course. I mean, 32 and snowy every single day. Like, we need to go to California. Let's go right now. And I'm like, okay, we'll do this. And I say yes. And I'm like, that weather doesn't seem right. So I Googled Boulder weather and it was supposed to be like 20 degrees warmer every day. So apparently she didn't have Boulder weather that she was sending me. She was sending me weather from the high mountains. And so of course I sent her back after we had already booked the flights and it was like, it was going to happen. I sent her back the weather from the South Pole. And I was like, negative 67. Boulder is going to be so cold next week.
Well, it turns out actually, because they altered the forecast.
Yeah,
so we're supposed to get, I mean, they're predicting there's like a small possibility we may get 4 to 8 feet of snow this weekend.
Yeah. Actually, the weather forecasters are kind of like, I don't trust these models. They're all saying, yeah, we'll get, there might be 7 inches or something. But one of the models, 4 to 8 feet. And I feel like the forecasters are approaching it exactly how I approach something like baking. It's like, you know, all these experts, all the models say you need to have baking. So screw that.
It's funny.
It's just going to do it.
It's funny you bring that up. I am just reminded now of the cheesecake. I think we talked about this on a prior episode, the cheesecake that you made for me back in college. And that definitely had 4 feet of cream cheese. In a bad way. Actually, I like everything. That was not, I mean, that was a dip your bagel in this cheesecake sort of way.
You ate it though.
It was delicious.
Exactly. I'm very fortunate I made it through that first year. But yeah, so big snowstorm coming. We're sorry to be leaving you, Colorado. But you know, get your snorkels out for all your small dogs.
Also, thank you so much for sending in. We've gotten a lot of feedback about the podcast, good questions, just like amazing people reaching out and saying hi. What is our email address?
someworkallplay@gmail.com. Haven't mentioned that in many podcasts, but still get many emails. So thank you for listening to back episodes.
So we got this amazing quote from someone who said, ran my first half marathon in Seattle today. I listened to your podcast during it. Thank you so much for the motivation. I'm like, wow, I can't believe someone is listening to our podcast running a half marathon. I'm like really stoked. And I'm also thinking like, we should wrap a little more Lizzo on here. People are listening to this.
I've actually heard that people say our podcast makes them run a little bit faster than some of the others. So if we can offer nothing else, hopefully from actually listen to it on 1.5 speed, then you'll really be starting to run and our jokes will seem funnier.
Well, it made me think about the fact that we should do just like a podcast for people who are racing and just say ridiculous fun mantra throughout, like, your legs are flying, you got this.
Yeah.
Feel the tempo.
Your butt is an amazing Christmas ham and it is getting roasted.
It actually reminds me, so there's a great meditation. It's called Fuck That, an honest meditation on YouTube. And it's hilarious. Listen to it if you get a chance. And I feel like we should do a podcast episode like that for workouts, for racing, for like any moment that you just need to like, ridiculous mantras, some compassionate self-completion in your life.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So Megan, speaking of meditation, has been doing some interesting ones recently. So I haven't been meditating with her that much. I'm really into reading my sports blogs at night, but I get a front row seat to Megan's meditation journey. There were two really good ones this week. One was just like a normal meditation. I think it was like probably 5 or 10 minutes. And so we had kissed goodnight. This was like 2 minutes later. It's silent time. You know, she's getting ready for bed. And all of a sudden the meditation comes in and it's like, I am going to guide you today. My name is Jeff. And then continues on. And all of a sudden, Megan just deeply says, Jeff.
I was vibing. Jeff and I had a vibe going on.
I feel like Jeff shouldn't be a meditation leader. It's like, hi, my name is Tank. And I'm going to lead you through the meditation.
No, I felt like Jeff was on some like serious surfing vibes. Yeah. I was feeling that in the moment. I'm like, Jeff, I'm going to come surfing with you. The other funny meditation though, so I was tired last week. You gave me a really hard workout. And
yeah.
I was like, David, this is your fault. I was shelled for like 4 days after that workout. And so one night I'm doing this meditation streak. I got to meditate every day. I found this 1 minute meditation and I was like, I can keep my streak going with this 1 minute meditation. And I don't know if I was just like projecting my insecurities about the fact that I was like kind of copying on the system, but I felt like they were judging me so hard.
Oh, they were judging you so hard.
The intro was something along the lines of like, what could you possibly be doing in your life that you have to listen to a 1 minute meditation session?
Yeah. The whole time they were just doing like they were just negging the heck out of you every single second.
It's like, take a deep breath, but only do it just once.
Just one deep breath on this one. Don't think about anything other than where you're at right now, because that's literally all the time we have. And I think 1 minute meditations are probably a market for that. We should do some work. I'll play 30 second meditations.
Oh, wait, I mean, I feel like with a 30 second meditation, we could just talk this fast and we could cover like 2x of what Jeff is covering.
I love it. Oh man, we're thinking of startups left and right. Trademark or copyright, not exactly sure. We're going to need a patent attorney on that one. You also did a podcast poll last week.
I did do a podcast poll. So I was a little sneaky in my podcast poll. So on Instagram, I asked listeners what they thought of us doing episodes with guests, but I left out the fact that we were planning to do bonus episodes with guests. I felt like if I put the word bonus in there, it might skew it a little bit more towards yes. And so thank you so much for people who participated in that poll. I got some amazing DMs talking about like the podcast, but no fear, we are not changing these weekly episodes. They're basically like—
Were the DMs saying not to change?
A lot of them were like, don't change. The 30-minute podcast is great. Like the interaction that you and David have is great. But I feel like for me, these are Tuesday morning dates that we have. Yeah. I'm like, don't worry, we are not changing. We can't break our Tuesday morning date morning. But I would love to have some guests coming up and doing some bonus episodes.
We have some very funny improv-heavy friends. We'll talk about that pretty soon. In the process of all these things that are starting to come up now, we're noticing a lot of people, as things start to open up, are starting to feel a little bit more optimism and hope. And that's really complicated given how crazy the last year has been and everything that's been happening. I mean, I think there's a lot going on right now in a lot of people's heads.
Actually, yeah, I've been seeing that with coaching. So I feel like right now, alongside that optimism and hope, is kind of like these changes in relationships, changes in work structure, people thinking about like racing and traveling again for the first time, but all of that coming with like a host of feeling like responsibilities and stress and all these different things. I know I was feeling that last night. So I feel like I have very little insurance right now in my work schedule for things going wrong or for things taking longer than usual. And last night around 10 p.m., I was thinking of that movie Garden State, where they go out and scream into the infinite. And I was like, please, like, I need to do that right now. I just have way too much going on.
Well, I mean, I think I might even mention this before, but after you took the MCAT, Megan thought she didn't do very well. And so on the way home, we pulled over and did the Garden State scream. And just Megan screamed in the middle of the forest. Of course,
actually, no, we were on the side of a highway. And I wonder, people are probably like, this is like not a good scene right now. We should call 911.
That's so true. Nothing that some big old cheesecake couldn't solve. But you know, I was thinking about it, it's a little bit like you're really cold and then you get into a hot tub. That's kind of like the state we're at right now, where at first it's like, this is too much. And I think a lot of the world is feeling a little bit like that. I mean, we're seeing a lot more depression and anxiety mixed with a lot more optimism. I mean, here in Boulder, they were having a big old maskless 300 person party out on the hill.
No, but it was way more than 300 people. Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking.
They're also flipping cars.
Putting an asterisk next to that hot tub that you talk about, your hot tubs are heated to a dangerous level. I actually had to have a conversation with you. I'm like, David, I don't think this is good for your external organs.
Yeah. My sperm just swims circles at this point.
I was a little worried about those mutations.
Also, we want to commemorate International Women's Day, which was yesterday when we're recording this on Tuesday. And so, hell yes to all the women out there and non-male identifying folks. It's like such a cool time for reflection.
I just was really inspired seeing like all the posts yesterday, seeing all the excitement surrounding it. Also, I need these days to sync up to my Google calendar. Yeah. I had no idea it was International Women's Day.
I didn't know until like 10:30 a.m. when the editor of Trollrunner was like, do you have any content for specific to this topic? And I was like, Megan, do we have any content for this topic?
Let's rush. Let's do this. Let's get this done. But I feel like there's also so many other days out there. So I went on a spree yesterday being like, what are the days that I'm missing? Because I feel like it's often 8 p.m. and I'm like logging into social media. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's waffle day. I missed waffle day. Like I could have had a great excuse to have waffles for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Actually, side note, waffle day is coming up on March 25th.
Oh man.
But there's also so many other ridiculous days out there. So water a flower day, May 30th, probably the only day my flowers are going to get water of this year.
You'll celebrate that on June 25th after they have died. You'll water your rock garden perhaps.
So Fight Procrastination Day is actually a holiday. That's on September 6th, but in keeping with my true spirit, I will celebrate on September 9th.
And wake up at 10 p.m. thinking about it, I'm sure. But for the article that we ended up writing was on the representation of women in exercise science studies, and that's coming out today. There is some fascinating data out there. A 2014 article in the European Journal of Sports Science reviewed 1,382 studies in three major exercise science journals and found that just 39% of study participants were women. But the fascinating part is that in 2016, a follow-up study looked at 188 studies and then separated that by study type. And when you broke it down to just performance studies, so it took out some of the general overall studies, just 3% of participants were women. And those are the studies that are used to inform training theory.
I was going to say, that is a scary, scary process, because I think the struggle with a lot of those studies too is in the discussion section, they often make these blanket statements like, oh, this probably applies to women, or, oh, there will be follow-up studies done in women. But I feel like, hey, we don't know for sure if this applies for women. Like, oftentimes you need the data to know.
Yeah, you have to show it.
You have to show it. And often the follow-up studies are not done either. And so I think this is like, it's such a, I mean, we've talked about this extensively on the podcast. I think whenever we highlight a study, I know in the outline, and I had this common catchphrase in the outline, like, ugh, the study includes zero women. But actually, one of the reasons that we wrote this article, one of the reasons that we're so passionate about this topic, is we saw an example of this just last week.
Yeah.
So a top women's running magazine released a post related to intentional glycogen depletion.
Like we talked about last week on the podcast.
Exactly parallel to what we talked about on our podcast. But the studies that they, so it was, the article was geared towards women, but the studies that they cited, zero of those studies had women participants.
Yeah, and that's horrifying, because the same thing that might be helpful for some men in extreme moderation could cause major health crises in women. Two, if you control for everything but gender, a man could become a world champion, and that a woman could go through, like, suffer decades of major issues. And it's like, this is underscores the big problem. And what we're suggesting is not necessarily that every study needs to have a certain number of women in it. Sometimes that is impractical due to the nature of the menstrual cycle, how funding cycles work, you know, the nature of the physiological thing we're trying to talk about. But when we're talking, when we're discussing these topics, preferably in the abstract and in all science reporting, it needs to be like, okay, this is how women experience this issue. And this is why, if we're not talking about it, this is why we're not talking about it.
Because I think there's so many people, so many writers and so many people who look towards the abstracts, you know, when they're doing research. It's like, well, first of all, you should really look at the entire article when you're writing up a research, you know, when you're writing up a science paper. But I think, like, you know, putting that pointedly, making that loud and clear in the abstract is so important in all of these studies.
Yeah, male is not the default. And that needs to be internalized in all science reporting as we're moving forward, especially in exercise science, where this isn't, these are not idle questions. These are how people evolve and adapt long-term, and it can lead to major issues if we don't pay attention to it.
And this is something we're going to keep this. I mean, I feel like we say this statement at least once a week on the podcast, and we're just going to keep this conversation going until we see it actually happen.
Wrapping it like Lizzo.
But in honor of International Women's Day, we're mixing things up a little bit with this episode. So this is episode 39, and we're taking a little tangent from the sports professionals. We're going with Amy Poehler for this episode.
Yeah, Amy Poehler is one of our favorite humans in the world. She was on the Armchair Expert podcast with Dax Shepard. It's an amazing episode. Listen to it. So many amazing things about Amy Poehler. She first really came into, I would say, the public consciousness when she co-founded the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in New York.
Which, for context, so many of the comedians in this, like, modern era have come through UCB.
Oh yeah, when I was in college, I spent so much time at UCB in New York. I wasn't a performer or anything like that. I was too nervous at the time. But for me, it felt like a community where I could go up and go down because it was down on the subway, and sit in these ratty chairs and watch amazing people do what they're talented at and feel like just totally comfortable where I never felt comfortable in New York. And she's done that for so many people.
And she also speaks out a lot about her experience as a woman. So she wrote the book, Yes, Please. I read it several years ago. And actually, as we were preparing for this podcast, I was like, this needs to get right on my read list. I love the book. So I love this quote. This quote comes from the book, Yes, Please. It's called Yes, Please because it's the constant struggle and often the right answer. Can we figure out what we want, ask for it, and stop talking? Yes, please. Is being vulnerable a powerful position? Yes, please. Am I allowed to take up space? Yes, please. Would I like to be left alone? Yes, please. Yes, please sounds powerful and concise. It is a response and a request. It's not about being a good girl. It's about being a real woman.
Hell yes.
I love that quote. I think that's just like an amazing, like, that just speaks to Amy Poehler's personality and everything that she's done in life. But I think it's like, for me, that really resonated.
Yeah. And, you know, how she supports other women and lifts everyone up and does it in a way that doesn't compromise who she is, even though she had to learn that the hard way over time, both with like how she views other comedians and how she views herself.
I mean, talk about supporting other women. Her relationship with Tina Fey. So Tina Fey, another like top female comedic, but I think like they've had this fascinating relationship because they've truly elevated each other in that process, even when it wasn't easy. So Tina has this great quote. Tina says, "However, I must say as a point of pride that I didn't get the job because I was a woman. I got the job because Amy Poehler moved to New York with the Upright Citizens Brigade and I was the next best thing." And so then, Amy Poehler goes on to say this quote, "People think of us as a comedy team, and I'm not quick to correct them. Why wouldn't I want to connect myself to the fiercest and most talented voice in the comedy world?" And I feel like Amy and Tina really have this like this relationship with each other where they realize that like they elevate each other and they truly are that way in that process. And I think it's like, it's just, it really speaks to this idea of women elevating other women and doing it in a way that elevates everyone in that process.
And it's not a zero-sum game. That's the hardest thing to realize with success in general, is that someone else's success, even if our brains want to reflect it onto our own, like, what are we capable of? It's like, no. It all gets lifted up. Unless we're literally talking about the gold medal in the 1500 meters at the Olympics, there are tons of gold medals to go around.
Gosh, I've never heard that said before. And I love that. It does not follow the conventional rules of math. It's like, adding one in an area does not subtract another.
You just get more to give. I mean, that's what I always try to think about with coaching. It's like, you know, our goal as coaches is like, well, if there are a million more runners and people that love running 10 years from now, then that's going to be, you know, 10,000 more coaches that are able to do this full time. And that's what our goal should be. Not like saying, oh, can we exclude and like hoard for ourselves?
Actually, thinking about coaching, this brings me back to a conversation I had with an athlete recently. And this athlete was struggling with injury. And I was talking to her on the phone, and I really appreciated the honesty that she brought to this conversation. But she was like, Megan, you know, I'm struggling with injury right now. And in that process, I found it hard to support other women or hard to support my competitors. Like, I just feel like jealous, or I feel, you know, why are they out there and not me? And I mean, I think, like, for me, it was such a beautiful conversation, because I'm like, this is putting voice to something that's, like, probably evolutionarily primed enough. It's probably something that we all feel. And what I said is like, and this is something that I think a lot of athletes are grappling with, is like, it's okay to experience those emotions, but it's the fact of, like, seeing those emotions and taking action and being like, you know, I'm going to turn this thought into action and go out there and support other women, even in the face of feeling that
we
way.
All, and I think we all have those feelings. I mean, I remember in the past when I've been injured, part of my brain sees someone running on the side of the road and is like, I hope they fall into a sewer and die. But I don't push them into the sewer. And I think what you're saying there is that recognizing these thoughts and not, like, letting your brain go in these spirals. It's like we talked about compassionate completion on a past episode. The idea is, like, in a workout, every neuron in your brain is screaming, panic, we are dying, stop. And the point isn't, you just don't stop. You learn that those voices are there, but you can redirect them in a place that's productive for you, which for this is like, oh, I can lift these people up, even as my brain is telling me, like, oh, cut them down, and hoard the one true ring, like Gollum.
And I think you can get to the point, like, I know for me in workouts, I've gotten to the point where I don't judge those voices. I'm like, oh, those voices are just there, and I'm going to take action through it all. And I think for me, it brings me back to the point, I remember when you started Swap 8 years ago.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I kind of came to my realization that you're going to be coaching all of my competitors. And I was horrified by that idea, because it's how much faith I have in the coaching process. I'm like, wait a second, you're going to coach all my competitors, you're going to make them really good. I don't know how I feel about this process. And I think for me, that was like a very real reckoning with this concept of being like, you know, I'm going to have to root for all of my competitors, all of these Swap teammates, because, like, that is what's going to, like, you know, just magnify my joy. And, like, you know, I get to live vicariously through the experiences that these women are having.
I love when you started opening up about that moment. I mean, that was one of our, we don't have that many arguments. That was a pretty big argument at the time, because it didn't fully compute to me, because I wasn't thinking of, oh, Megan is like a competitor of these people. And it was your fire and your drive, the things that have made you great, competing with the part of you that you really want to lift up. And, you know, I think we're all seeing that. And so, yeah, it just gets super tough to balance these competing things. And I think what Amy Poehler shows is that you can lift others up and, you know, also not compromise yourself in the process there. And so that's kind of what we want to take away from her.
I love that. And she also emphasizes too, so she is such a quick thinker, like, she's amazing at improv. And she has this advice out there that I've seen across a couple of different mediums, which is, don't move. Like, it's okay not to respond immediately or not have an answer right away. Like, it's okay to give yourself that gift of time to think and process. And I think coming from her, someone who is, like, such a fast thinker and such a doer, like, that advice is extra powerful for me.
Well, especially because in improv, you can't stop. It's kind of like this podcast, you know, like, we're trying not to let there be dead space, because, you know, just 30 minutes, you're trying to entertain, things like that. And when she talks about her own life, she's like, okay, when I'm directing, which is what she's kind of moving towards now, it's like, I don't need to have an answer right away. In fact, that's maybe the wrong way to do it. That's maybe not being as honest to myself and my authentic, like, I'm portraying a performer version of myself rather than the real version of myself when I do that.
And I think getting okay with, like, metaphorical and literal silence is such an amazing thing in life. Like, I know, so I did a podcast a couple of weeks ago. It's called the Curious Minds Podcast. I think it's coming up soon with Dr. Laura Pence. And she said something, so she gave kind of rapid fire questions at the end, but she said something that no podcast host has ever said to me, which is, hey, Megan, you know, I'm a therapist. I'm okay with silence. I'm going to take some time to think about these questions. And no one has ever said that to me. And I thought it was just, like, such this beautiful gift of, like, sitting there in literal silence with someone. But I think I've recently tried to take that approach and apply it to people that I'm mentoring or working with. And, you know, when presenting them with a decision, be like, please don't decide now. Like, take some time, like, you know, give yourself this, like, break, give yourself the metaphorical silence to, like, sit here and, like, you know, just think about it and process it.
What I'm learning is to be comfortable with other people's silence too, because, like, my brain fills in those empty spaces with, you are not worthy. You are messing up something really badly. And in fact, silence is just silence. You know, yeah, it doesn't have those things mapped onto it.
I mean, we'll spend like entire runs together just having like silence. And there's like so much that's like, I mean, I think I know that your brain is processing the beauty of being out there on the trails. And it's like, we're like working through this process and like processing it together in that silence. And it's kind of a beautiful thing.
I love it. Awesome. Topic one, you want to do this?
Let's do this. So this topic is on body image. And the question is from ST. It's starting to be sports bra season. Oh, heck yes. Do you have tips for body image and running?
So amazing question. We've seen a lot of this start to form, especially as the first warm weather comes in. And where I wanted to start was, so last week, the promotional images for Space Jam 2 came out. And I think probably the most newsworthy thing of Space Jam 2, aside from it being awesome that it exists, is that Lola Bunny, so Bugs Bunny's, you know, female counterpart, Lola Bunny from Space Jam, in the first one in 1996, had boobs that were, I would say, gargantuan. And now they've shrunk down 8 sizes in the modern version. And I think it's really weird that we're sexualizing a rabbit.
Also, it like unleashed so much internet commentary throughout this process. It was kind of horrifying. Well, I think it's fascinating because we actually, don't remember what episode it was, but somewhere early on we talked about like, I talked about like small boob power. It's like, you know, I got small boobs, like rock it, but you know, own what you have. But I think like it was fascinating because we received a lot of viewer or listener feedback during that time about like, I have large boobs. This is my experience. I got breast implants and this is my experience. And I think it just like highlights the fact that like, you know, we are all just like thinking about and like internalizing bodies in totally different ways. And like whatever.
And there's a multitude of experiences.
Exactly.
And they're all valid. I mean, I thought what was so weird about Lola Bunny is how it emphasizes these cultural associations we're making without even understanding it. I mean,
well, also Lola Bunny was, I mean, I think like the thing about Lola Bunny too, is if you put her in the real world, it's kind of like a Barbie doll. Like make Lola Bunny like walk upstairs and she is going to fall over. Like you can't support those proportions in like modern physics.
We tell athletes to lean forward on uphills. She does not have a problem with that. It was kind of weird. It was like, how many people looked at Lola Bunny the first time and are like, I kind of want to fuck that rabbit. Like that was what they were going for. So I'm kind of glad that it changed, not because of the nature of it, but because I don't think we should be sexualizing small animals.
Well, it's actually funny. Speaking of animals, this makes me think of, so we were watching the Westminster Dog Show the other night, and I feel like no one talks about the fact that that is such a ridiculous thing. And I think it highlights the fact of the human brain, like wanting to establish these notions of perfection. So the way the Westminster Dog Shows work is that there's this quote unquote breed perfection that like we've established over time about like the like appropriate like dimensions or hair length or eye length or like snout length or whatever it may be. And then these dogs are compared to that. But it's like all of these things that we've come up and like constructed over time as the human species about another species. Like to me, it's just this like fascinating kind of
I was just thinking, you know, when the judge goes in and they like cup them around the waist and things, I imagine what the judge is thinking, if you had a thought bubble, I want to fuck that schnauzer. But
Pekingese.
And I think that, you know, when we're talking about these body image topics, the reason we start with humor is that this is so impossibly hard because our brains on a very fundamental level at the very base of our how they think, internalize ideas of what bodies should be and are that are both unrealistic and irrelevant. You know, when we're talking about like how we view celebrities and things like that, the weird thing about celebrity, often they're selected for this abnormal standard, or they're adapted to this standard via things like surgery or steroids.
And we're talking about even like, I mean, I've heard there's like new video editing technology where like you can edit someone's appearance like throughout an entire video, which is mind blowing to me.
Yeah. And essentially we're internalizing all of these very weird things. And it's not to say what the celebrity does is bad, you know, good for them. But the point is, why should we care about how our skin covers our body in exactly this way?
And the answer is, I think we often care in a way that is also distorted too. So I know like you've talked about this before where like you look in a mirror and you see something very different. In fact, like you label mirrors as good mirrors or bad mirrors or okay mirrors. I've never seen anyone do that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I think you do it too.
I don't know about that.
But no, I actually avoid mirrors altogether because it brings up a lot for me. So my body image journey, like I was super uncomfortable in my own body. I've talked about being an overweight kid before and how that evolved. But it goes to everything. I was telling Megan for the first time ever, as we were talking about this podcast, when I was a freshman in high school, I was self-conscious about my height. And there's a period of time for like a month where I just remember this yesterday. I would put balled up socks under my heel in my shoe to just be like a half inch taller.
Maybe that sounds like modern day prehabilitation for plantar fasciitis.
Yeah, exactly.
With you.
I was just doing one of those night socks all the time.
You're doing the Strasbourg sock to make yourself taller.
My calves got freaking ripped. But I think that that's a microcosm of a broader, you know, journey with body image that for me didn't really I didn't feel comfortable until I met Megan, and Megan fully validated me in the skin that covers my bones and body, you know, and that was everything. And now I don't have any of those issues. I'd be comfortable streaking down the street naked. But, you know, the year before I met Megan, that would have been the most horrifying thing on earth. And I think for me, and I think for everyone in our lives, it's like, okay, that validation that we get from someone else, we shouldn't rely on it, but know that there are people out there that love you for you. And there are people out there that will judge you for you. And the people that will judge you for you can go fuck themselves.
I was gonna say, I think the only shameful thing in this process, and Brené Brown does a lot of great work on like vulnerability and shame, is the person who is judging someone else for being vulnerable. And I think like, as it relates to the topic of like running in sports bras, it's like, you are beautiful as you are. Like, rock whatever clothing is the most comfortable for you in that situation. And what I would say too is like, oftentimes I've had athletes who are like, yeah, the first 2 miles out the door, I was feeling really self-conscious. Yeah. And then like, find flow state on the trails, wear whatever you want and just like rock it. And if you're struggling in that process of like knowing you're okay as you are, like that's okay too.
And everyone does. Yeah. I mean, we were talking about Dax Shepard earlier. He always is like, oh my God, I wish I could go back and tell the younger me that you're sexy as shit. Because if we're judging ourselves to an impossible standard, we're all gonna find something. I bet The Rock is like, I don't love this part of my body or whatever. The Rock is probably uncomfortable about taking his shirt off for that thing, or whoever the celebrity is. Lola Bunny is probably uncomfortable about it if she was at all, animated by humans.
Okay, so I'm a rock person. I always pick up fun rocks on the trails. And I love the ones that are like glittery and sparkly because they have like these different elements mixed in. And I'm sure The Rock is like, you know, fuck this sparkle. Like, you know, fuck this glitter. And it's like, no, the glitter is what makes you special. And I think like on this body image topic, like embrace the parts of you that are unique. Like, you are beautiful as you are, own that. Like,
yeah.
You know, and that's like such an amazing
and
thing.
And where I found a lot of power is reframing it from what my body can't do, right? I'm never going to be like a celebrity whose face is on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine. And I wouldn't want to be, versus what my body can do, which is my body can, you know, live and experience and shine this light that is independent of these external standards that I have no fucking control over.
So moral of the story, put your sports ball on, shine your
or
light,
not.
Do your thing. Yeah. And
just let your light shine however it shines, whether that's covered up or not covered up. Your light is freaking awesome as it is. Want to get to topic two very quickly?
Let's do topic two. So this is on stagnation from PW. I'm a lifelong runner in my late 30s who has just started to take training more seriously. I'm ramping up mileage consistently, up to 60 to 70 miles, mostly trail miles per week, including one easier week each month. I do one workout, one long run, and a lot of chill miles each week. And I'm getting faster and stronger and having fun. It's awesome. So here's my question. Can you tell me what kind of plateaus I may encounter and how I can make them work for me and continue to progress? How will I know I'm starting to plateau? What will cause it and how should I react?
This is an amazing question. I think how we want to address it is via what we're looking for in training, which is positive feedback cycle. Like, once you get positive feedback cycles going, the world becomes unlimited to you as an athlete. That's how you progress to unthinkably high levels. And with me in particular, I remember being 21 after 3 years of very serious running and being like a mid-pack, front of the mid-pack finisher, and thinking that that was my ceiling. I was happy with that. That was fine.
Okay. Tangent. I think you were very hard on yourself.
Yeah.
Because I think like you were more of a front of the pack. And this is the thing that I say with plateaus is like, make sure you're looking at the correct data points. Like, you know, don't just take like a data point from one random easy run that was rough, or like, you know, don't just connect dots that aren't there. Like, don't be super hard on yourself. Like, it's really important to have someone help you look at the holistic picture in that.
That's
process.
So true. And the external perspective helps. But I think for me, because I thought that, I thought I needed to go harder and harder and harder to improve. And as a result, stagnated so hardcore. And then over the next few years, realized that the positive feedback cycle we're really looking for is the low level aerobic system via easy running and things like that, that we've talked about in past podcasts, with speed and upper end performance, which is like the strides and hill strides and very short, efficient musculoskeletal biomechanical output things. And once you get that positive feedback cycle going, easy running leads to slightly better short speed. The speed leads to slightly better easy running. And over time, it goes up and up and up and up and up. And that just took me 3 or 4 years to learn.
And I think the other thing that you can layer in on top of that is kind of like this neuromuscular and central governor plateau, where you're learning this ability to suffer. You're learning the ability to work through pain. And I've had a lot of athletes read the book Endure, which is a fantastic book. And it goes through some of the different elements of this. Interestingly, though, I've had a few athletes who read the book Endure, and they email me or they call me and they're like, Megan, I don't think I'm suffering enough in races. And I think it's always easy to look back on races 2 days later and be like, nah, that wasn't hard. I was good. But I'm always there to remind them and be like, didn't you pee yourself at the end of that race? Or didn't you fall over at the finish line? And so I think it's always so important. Again, it's like these data points. It's like to view that central governor, the ability to process someone's pain within that life.
Yeah, I think we all sell ourselves short on how hard we push, you know? And so I think the three main plateaus to think about are the aerobic plateau, which you can get through by, you know, making sure easy runs are easy, doing cross training if you need to, doing that sort of thing. A speed plateau, which is make sure you are your fastest version of yourself. If you take nothing else away from this, make sure all year round, if you can, you do things like hill strides, you stay fast. The third is a strength plateau. So your ability to like withstand fatigue. You know, you don't need to do too many long tempos, but this is a place that's, you know, keeping a consistent strength work.
I think unleashing your inner athlete here. Yeah. So like, you know, really working on those agility skills, layering in that strength and that process.
And eating plenty is so important all the time, because
that's the only way you're going to like, you know, move past these plateaus.
Yeah. If you're not eating plenty, your body is like one of those popsicle stick houses held together by like day old gum. It's just going to take a little thing for it to all fall apart. And that's like a plateau that a lot of people
going to make sense that the gum is just sucralose. It's like all this like artificial sweetener holding up this popsicle stick house.
Yeah. So let's get the real sugar. Let's get the real fat and protein and carbs. And let's do this.
Let's rock your body the way it is.
Woohoo. Bye, everyone. Right, Shine. Woo.
Bye.